Thank you, Dan.
Dan is magic.
Dan's the man.
Nice.
Magic man. Welcome to Yip Podcast. This is Mary.
And this is Tammy.
Yip. And today on the show, our special panel episode of the show, we have Carol.
Hi.
Welcome back, Carol.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Wow. You can lie with a straight face.
But why bother?
Oh, this is getting off to a great start.
Yeah. Quick notice about what we're doing with music today, since we have our oh-so-exciting panel episode. We're not going to be having two music spotlights. I picked some of my favorite songs that I've been drilling to a lot lately. Most of them are fusion-y. And so we're just going to hear them as little song breaks, snippets, you might say, every once in a while.
Cool.
I know, I just said it every once in a while. Snippets is what I meant.
Snippet.
I didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night, so.
Oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep either.
What about you, Carol?
I got lots of sleep.
Nice.
Oh, I was going to tell you that I bought my tickets for Cues and Tattoos today.
So exciting. I hope to get mine this weekend.
You're getting a tattoo?
No, there's this. Me and Tammy decided we wanted to try out a new festival, and she's been wanting to go to Cues and Tattoos in Seattle for a while, and I hadn't heard of it before, and I was like, that's awesome, because West Coast. Just leave the dust of this old town behind us. And I've never been to Seattle.
Oh, you're going to like it. It's fun.
I hear it's rainy. But I like the rain, and I'm not made of sugar, so we should be okay.
Well, it's better than humidity.
That's true.
Hear, hear.
But yeah, I'm excited. So look out for us, people. Look out for your podcast. We're representing out in Cues and Tattoos. But it's kind of sad. I mean, not that it's sad that we're going out there, because I'm very excited about that. But like, people right now are starting to think about going to TribalCon. And so I've had a lot of people ask me if I'm going to TribalCon. I'm like, no, I cannot afford two festivals like that.
February, March. Sorry.
Yeah.
I love TribalCon. Really, really fun. Definitely.
Yeah.
But trying new things is also good. And you know how I struggle with trying new things. So it's
I'm trying
thing.
To help you through that.
I know.
And seeing new parts of the country. Very important.
Yeah. Yeah. I just need more spontaneous friends, because I'm not spontaneous. Are you spontaneous, Carol?
With a lot of planning. Yeah.
Count. Moving on.
I'm like faux spontaneous.
Hey, why don't we have our first music break?
Cool.
Cool. Okay. So our first little music snippet you're going to hear is Ain't No Rest for the Wicked by Cage the Elephant. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down. I can't hold back. Though you know I wish I could.
This weekend, I went to VegFest, which is a local like vegetarian festival, but vegan lifestyle festival here in Orlando, and listened to Yvonne Smith, who wrote a book called The Traveling Vegetarian, and she travels all over the world and is able to show how you can eat wherever as a vegan, actually, not a vegetarian. And she gave us tips and tricks, what you can eat, what you can't eat, gave us a list of restaurants, just franchises that serve vegetarian food, and then went through like points of why people decide they aren't going to go vegan. And so like one of them was that I'm too addicted to cheese. And I was
ding,
like,
ding, ding.
Oh, that hits home. So Dan and I have decided we are going to move toward being vegan. It is not going to be a race. but little by little, just because I know a couple of our listeners are interested in hearing my vegetarian adventures.
Like your journey.
I am kind of scared because I'm wondering if I'm moving too fast.
Just, you know, if you slip, then slip back into being a vegetarian, and then that's okay. Don't be like, oh my gosh, I need cheese. I'm going to go eat some steak.
Well, even like with becoming a vegetarian, I had to just keep telling myself that I wasn't actually becoming a vegetarian. I was just slowly taking, you know, I just didn't need to eat as many meals with meat in it. Doing it that way, I guess, like, I just tricked my mind, and then eventually it was like, oh, I haven't eaten meat in I don't know how long now. I think I'm going to ease into it that way. And what Dan is doing is, as we run out of different things in the house, he's replacing them with vegan substitutes. So his idea is probably by the new year, we'll probably be vegan. Probably. And then it's moving Josie over is our big thing too. So if any of you guys have kids that are vegan, like, any tips? Because one, she doesn't quite get it. And it's like, she's already, a 3-year-old is a picky eater anyway. You guys are always so helpful when I have questions. So if anyone has tips on how to switch over a child's diet, please let me know. Well, we've had a thread up on our tribe, and we've been requesting via our newsletter as well to send us any discussion points for this panel episode. And we have had some people go ahead and send in their questions, their concerns, their thoughts on different things going on in the belly dance community. So we thought we would bring those up and discuss them amongst ourselves. So the first point was from Mari. Mari is with Alchemy Dance in Augusta, Georgia, and I had an interview with her on a past episode. So Mari's topic of conversation is that she's working on elevating belly dance as a dance form, and she wants it as respected as ballet and jazz and modern and everything else. She thinks that within our belly dance community, it really starts there, and valuing ourselves as dancers and valuing our time and our talent and encouraging our students and other dancers to do the same thing. So she's seen in her area, and I don't know if she's seen this in other areas or whatnot, but she says in her area, she's seen where groups are dancing in restaurants and venues for no charge at all versus, you know, a regular dancing fee. I don't know what else to call it. Dancing fee, right? That's fine. Sounds awkward. It sounds like, I don't know. Anyway, so it does sound right. Doesn't it sound like, anyway. So she was saying that, like, to go to a ballet performance, for instance, you're not going to pay $10 or $5 to go, which in some cases isn't true for the little children's nutcrackers. But anyway, so she wants to know what our stand is and how do we stand against belly dancers cheapening their own art.
I think you have to really define what you mean by a local event. Now, when you're comparing to ballet, ballet is generally, you either have a school recital, which is a very unprofessional event put on for family. They charge money for it because they need money to pay the production costs. On the other end, you have the professional ballet companies. They're paying, they have the theater, they pay their dancers a regular salary. Belly dance falls someplace in between those two things. If you're a solo dancer, you have one whole set of criteria. Are there enough places to dance that you can go out and say, well, I'm not going to dance unless I get paid? There are those of us that would sit at home and think about our shoes and our feet and never dance again if we insisted on being paid every time we go out and perform. It's sad, but it's true. And there's a glut in some markets. Here in the Orlando area, there are a lot of dancers.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to go to nonprofits, charitable events, you know, then you don't feel like you're cheapening the art. I wouldn't say that a person is cheapening the art just because they can't charge a big fee for their dancing.
Yeah, I would agree, because not all, I think it goes back to thinking of these, what she's considering professional dance forms, that you're right, they have student recitals just like we have student recitals. And I'm sorry, at a student showcase of any type of dance, I'm not going to pay, you know, $50 to go to a student showcase. They don't charge that for those kind of dances either. I mean,
sometimes the $10 or $15 that they do charge seems like an overprice.
Yeah, again, but usually you're going to see your friends or family. Well, okay. But same thing, you know, same thing with some of the belly dance student showcases. Sometimes you feel that $10 or $15 is like, ooh, okay. You know, I don't think it's unreasonable for us to charge that. And then, but she also brought up things like hoflas. To me, hoflas are the opportunity to perform for free, you know, or whatnot, because it's really supposed to kind of be a belly dance community held event.
Exactly.
It's not really necessarily a public event. I mean, yes, the public can attend, but we're not putting on a show for them. We're really kind of showcasing ourselves to other dancers. It's a great way, if you're a new instructor or something like that, to be able to showcase what you do.
It's also a good place to try out new material. Does it work in front of an audience? Yeah. Or maybe it wasn't such a great idea, but you haven't really offended anybody and nothing is lost.
And that's where a student has the opportunity to finally have a chance to perform. Because I think that's kind of an issue as well, that we have students who don't have the opportunity to perform at Hofla's because there's not any held in their area. So they think, oh, the only way I can perform is to go get this job somewhere, but I'm not a professional, so I'm going to only charge, you know, a quarter of the rate. I don't agree with that.
But then again, depending on where they're dancing, I'm assuming that when she's talking about something like that, she means like the restaurant gigs.
Yes.
And typically, in a restaurant, you're not looking for quality dancing. What they are looking for when they hire a dancer is somebody who's cute, has a good costume, and doesn't annoy the customers, just is there for background entertainment. Well, no, seriously. They're not going to want somebody who's doing a sword routine and bangs the bottles off the table, you know. Things like that. They want somebody who's going to be attractive, but not...
just ambiance.
In their face, yeah.
So, ambiance. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. It's you're just kind of like wallpaper, for lack of a better
Very pretty wallpaper.
And only very pretty wallpaper. They don't care if you can dance.
And see, I think that's also a part of the problem that I think Mari is touching on. And this is a question that has so many different facets. We could go on, like, for another 7 days. But I think part of the problem with the preconceptions that she was talking about, comparing, you know, a professional, you know, ballroom dancer, professional tap dancer, professional whatever dancer compared to, you know, in quotes, professional, I'm now a professional belly dancer. I think a lot of what the view is of belly dance is, for a lot of people, and not everybody, but for a lot of people, this is a hobby that people start as an adult. Mm-hmm. And you can get by, you know, like Carol was talking about, you can get by as a quote unquote professional belly dancer with very little skills. All of us have seen those dancers who have really solid gigs or are performing at restaurants who don't know what the heck they're doing, but they are super cute. You don't even know what you're shaking. Your whole body's vibrating with your awesome boob shimmy, you know? But the general public doesn't know good belly dancing from bad belly dancing. So you can really get away with that. I mean, if you're watching someone who claims to be a professional ballet dancer and they can't do a split or something, you go, wow, you know what? I think she's falsely advertising.
But you're not going to see that, because a professional ballet dancer, if they're in a company, they're in a company and they can
exactly.
do the choreography, or they can't, they get fired. You know, you don't see ballet dancers offering to do what, ballet-grams or...
Every time we opened the door, this girl just like did a split and was like, "Happy birthday!"
Seriously, they don't have to look for jobs the same way that belly dancers do. They're either in a company or they're with a troupe, or you know, they're working to be in a show.
Well, and I think that's it too, that they're not necessarily out there looking for work, because in, say, you know, we keep talking about the ballet arena, but you know, they have to start young. And they get hired young and they get fired young. And well, then that could be the end of their career, and they got to either be a lawyer or whatever. Like,
their good dancing years are done by the time they're 30, 35 tops. You know, then they go and become teachers, trainers, coaches, whatever. The other thing you have to understand is that the audience that doesn't know good belly dancing also doesn't know good regular dancing, too. If you watch Dancing with the Stars, the people that win are not the best dancers. They're the most popular people. Mm-hmm. Or the cutest, or, you know, the ones that the judge picked on. It's not ever all about talent.
My point was to pull back to that. Because belly dance, I think, is something that a lot of people start later in life, I think there's a public perception about, explain this well, not necessarily not needing to be as much talent, but that
skill.
They haven't invested as much, so why should we pay as much?
Well, and the other thing you have to understand with something like that, most people think belly dancing is inappropriate for children. The costuming and, oh, the moves are so provocative. Well, sometimes,
don't get me started on that. But
seriously, that's why you're not going to have belly dance school for kids starting at 3 years old and filling up classes like a ballet school fills up the classes. Term after term after term after term.
Yeah, and jazz classes, and they tart them up in those inappropriate costumes and make them dance to Britney Spears. Wow. Don't get me started on kids and dance.
But that's why most people don't start it until they're more mature, you know, late teens, early 20s. There'll be classes at the Y, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, and this is something I can do. At that age, you can't go and start ballet dancing. You can't start tap dancing, jazz. You can take the classes, but you don't even stand a chance of ever being able to do it. The techniques that are involved with belly dancing, not that they aren't difficult, not that you don't have to work at it, but they don't involve the same changing of your body from an early age, training yourself to do things that are not necessarily natural movements.
Well, also taking dance as an adult, what I think also sets ballet dance apart is that a lot of people get into it, or once they get into it, it's like, oh my gosh, the costuming. Yep. I can't wait to perform because I want to wear a fancy costume. And it becomes very geared towards performance, where any other adult level dance class I've taken, there's not even a question, are we going to have an adult level jazz one recital soon, coach? It's like, no, you're just taking this class for fun. It's like another exercise class. You take this class for fun. It's not as geared towards performance. While belly dancers, a lot of the girls I've talked to, and some of the struggles that I've talked to with different instructors are, I have to make sure my students have places to perform or they will go somewhere else.
I mean, yeah, I would love for people to think highly of belly dance like they do the other art forms. However, I just don't think it's ever going to be on the same platform.
Well, to a certain extent, though, you have belly dance superstars, which is...
Yeah, of course.
The thing is, we don't have a standardization because there's so many different forms of belly dance, you know. Like jazz and modern and, you know, they all came out of ballet. So it takes time to evolve that stuff. And belly dancing in the United States has only been around, what, since what, that Chicago World's Fair in the
1890s?
1893. All right. Okay. Well, I knew it was in the 1890s. I was close. Anyway, but... That's as long as we've had. So there it hasn't been any standardization.
To end this question, personally for me, I just feel that belly dance, it's just not the same dance form as ballet jazz. I'm just...
It's a very different animal. I don't think there's an easy fix. It's not an easy question.
Mary, would you like to do a musical number?
Yes, I would. I would like to do a musical number right now. I would like to sing Love Look Away from Flower Drum Song.
Love, look away from me. I need a minute.
She needs more than a minute.
While I'm recovering, let's hear a song. So, now we're going to hear a little number called Come Together by the Beatles. Got this weird look from Carol when we played Come Together by the Beatles, but I think it would be an awesome song for a dance routine. Seriously, dance to it all the time. And that's my favorite version. I know there's lots of covers. You know, the Aerosmith version is whatever, and the Michael Jackson version, I have nothing against it, but there's nothing like the classic. Okay, moving on. So we have another question by my friend Tazior, and her question was about undercutting.
Which we kind of touched on in our previous discussion. To me, undercutting is not appropriate. However, I don't think that students are taught not to undercut. So they don't know better going out there.
Well, I mean, I think you have to take into account that there are a lot of people teaching who I don't think should be teaching.
Yes.
Because, again, there's not a standard. So people can take classes for a year and a half and go, golly, I'm brilliant. Or let's not even, you know, 8 months. I'm so gifted. I'm ready to teach after 8 months and no one's in my area anyway. And I just moved to Podunk, middle of nowhere. And so I might as well start teaching some classes. Or even, you know, or maybe you don't like your instructor and you want to go off and do your own thing. Or, you know, a million other reasons that people have started teaching. And suddenly belly dance classes are available at the local whatever center. And you've got a class of people who have no idea that you have no idea what you're doing. And I cannot be the only one who's seen this many times.
No, it's out there.
You know, and so,
I just like your description of it.
Thank you. I thought it was rather poetic myself. So if you have someone who's been dancing, say, under 2 years, they're not going to know the politics and the ins and outs and what they should be doing. If they can barely break down the moves, why would they even start worrying about ethics?
Exactly. Like, I really think that's kind of where the problem of undercutting starts. Granted, yes, there are some dancers out there who undercut and know what they're doing and are perfectly okay with it. But to me, I think a vast majority of it is more that they really just don't realize what they're doing. A lot of them are hobbyists. This is something, you know, oh, great, I can get a gig at a restaurant because this person charges this much and I'm totally going to charge less than her. And, you know, whatever. It's just a weekend job for me. I'm sure it's just a weekend job for her. And doesn't realize, like, this is some people's
exactly
full-time, they need this money to pay their bills type deal. So it's, yes, it's sad, and I don't approve of undercutting. I just don't think that instructors always share ethics with their students like they should. And really, from the very beginning, I think it should be discussed.
Well, and even if you share it, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to embrace the concept.
Exactly. No, of course not. But at least if it's out there, then, you know, then we can discuss more. Undercutting is so wrong, people shouldn't do it. Whereas right now, it's like, yes, it is. But if they don't know, you know, they don't realize what they're doing, you know, is ignorance bliss kind
but
of
I
deal.
Mean, even if they, but I mean, even if they do, it's not like there's some belly dancers union everybody has to join. And if you don't, you know, charge the right amount, you'll be like ostracized and no one will hire you.
No, but there are some communities that...
There are some communities that have banded together, but I would say they're...
Oh, they're few and
definite
far between.
In the minority.
Yeah, I think the area that I see that seems to work really well together is the DC area. Mm-hmm. Like, it just seems all their dancers are very supportive of each other. They all do a lot of group shows together, which, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised by, but I am, because just seeing other areas that do not have that sense of community, to watch the DC area come out, and they have, like, I think they do DC Tribal Cafe every month, and they have, it's more... It seems like a hofla, but a lot of instructors dance there and they encourage all of their students to go and advertise it. And they're one of the groups, I think, that in a sense unionized and decided we're going to charge X amount and, you know, we shouldn't take any less than that. So do you have another music thing or?
Funny you should ask, because I do.
Another music thing.
I know these are kind of random, but there are a lot of songs that I've loved for a really long time. But, you know, not necessarily want to plug a whole album. I might like the whole album, but not for belly dance, is what I mean. So that's where these songs are coming from. They're just our random songs. The next song we're going to listen to is Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing by Chris Isaak.
Baby did a bad, bad thing. You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was going to break in two? I didn't think so. You ever tried with all your heart and soul to get your lover back to you? I wanna hope so. You ever pray with all your heart and soul just to watch her walk away? Yeah. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Feel like crying.
So our next question comes from Sunshine, and she's taking us in a different direction.
A happier, sunnier direction?
Possibly. actually... You know, she has a limited amount of funds. Who doesn't? Okay. She wants to know. She's a baby belly dancer, and she's relatively new. She takes ATS classes right now, and she wants to know where she should devote her money to, you know, any additional funds. Should she just take more classes, diverse classes, or should she save it all up and just take workshops?
I think it's fun to dabble in a little bit of everything, because I think you can get inspiration from everything. As long as you feel like you're getting something from it, then fine. I wouldn't stress about it totally being in your arena unless that's something you're really going for. Like right now, me and Tammy, for instance, recently took the general skills, and we're really trying to sort of focus more on ATS so that we can really learn it well and not confuse ourselves.
It's one of the reasons we're going to Cues and Tattoos, because they offer so many fat chance classes there. Yeah. As well.
Yeah. If you're a relatively new dancer, then I think it's a good idea to explore different stuff. I would just make sure you do your homework. If you have limited funds, there's at least one tribe that has workshop reviews. I would go online and just try to find reviews of different workshops that an instructor has done. Because sometimes instructors are very famous and really awesome performers. And I've taken a class or a workshop and just been really just bleh. You know,
and I've seen the opposite happen too, yeah. That they're okay dancers per se, performance wise, but their, you know, teaching skills are outstanding.
Exactly. So.
Well, and because it's a big country, somebody can be an absolutely outstanding dancer, teacher, performer, and, you know, famous in their part of the country. I just recently took a Festival on the Nile workshops with Rachel George. Yeah. I had never heard of her. She just blew me away. But to go and Google things and look on YouTube and see what kind of different things are out there, it's really hard when you don't have a lot of money because you want to try a lot of different things. So I think if you can, in the beginning, experience as much as you can visually. And if you can get to an event that has a really a big range. Now, TribalCon, I was speaking with Zia at Dragon Con, and I said, well, you know, there's not really much for a cabaret dancer there. And she said, no, that's not true, because what they do is they try and make the classes so that everybody who comes can get something out of it. And they get the kind of instructors that are going to be giving really deeply intensive classes.
That that's really true, because other than like ATS geared workshops, the other workshops I've taken there, Jill Parker, I mean, Ariella, Mira Betts, a lot of people that don't even classify themselves necessarily as tribal specifically, but it breaks down to just really hard technique that anybody could benefit from.
Because when you come right down to it, technique is basically technique. You can do good technique that will be the same in fusion and in ATS and mm-hmm. in cabaret and in, you know, any other thing that you talk about. It even works in jazz and modern dancing.
I think you really should dabble in a lot of different classes as well, especially as a new dancer. You never know what's going to strike you.
You can always call me and ask me, Sunshine. I'll tell you what I think about people. Uncensored.
Exactly. Lots of it is edited out. So let's go ahead and listen to another track.
Okay, the next song we're listening to is called My Superman by Santa Gold. I watch you capture what I can hold. Now make it make some sense to me.
All
what's
right.
Our next question? Ooh, can I introduce a question?
Sure, it's from Sarah Kate.
No. Oh. I got a question emailed to me on Tribe.
Oh, cool. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Sarah Kate, you'll be up next.
It doesn't mean we don't care. SK.
Yeah, you gotta be nice to her if she's gonna let you sit in her place.
She's like, we were gonna let you use the sofa bed, but now you're gonna sleep on the floor. I'll bring my yoga mat just in case. Okay, so Katie from Louisiana recently joined our tribe. So her two cents that she's throwing in is a question about fusing things, which was also Sarah Kate's question.
Wow, nice tie in there.
So she is wondering about the debate in the belly dance world about when to limit fusion. So, and then Sarah Kate said,
Sarah Kate is actually discussing the ethics of fusing. She feels comfortable, for instance, fusing tango with her belly dance because she has studied tango intensively. She says, I have a strong interest in Japanese dance, but I've never studied it, so I wouldn't feel right trying to fuse it.
Don't you just like get a fan and do your hair differently? So, and then it's legitimate fusing, isn't it? Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun. Exactly.
Yeah.
So her question was more along the lines of fusing and the ethics of fusing. So good tie-in. Mary, yeah, good
right?
job.
Yeah. Well, speaking from the go buy a fan and be Japanese thing, I think you should be able to tell what you're fusing without the aid of costumes or props. Because I think a lot of people go, oh, I'll just change my costuming a little bit. And then suddenly, I'm hula dancing. I have coconut bra on. So suddenly I am half hula dancing, half fusion dancing, half tribal dancing. You know what I mean?
What actually is the definition of fusion dancing? In order to talk about the ethics of it, you have to really have a clear definition of what it is that you're being ethical about, you know.
Okay, well, how would you define fusion?
Now, you remember, I'm coming from old school. To me, fusion is anything that I'm doing that didn't come from the Middle East. Now, being an American belly dancer, that makes me a fusion dancer. To get back to the ethics of fusing dances together, I mean, how would it be unethical if you're taking a piece of music and you're interpreting it?
Yeah.
That's what dancing is about, belly dancing, fusion dance, whatever you're talking about, what form. You are interpreting music because of how it impacts you, whether you're choreographing for a group or improvising for yourself or improvising in ATS. How do you decide what's fusion, what's not, what belongs? Back in the day, it was really a big deal. They came out with something called Flamenco Moro. They started fusing, and they did use the word fusing, flamenco dancing with belly dancing because the Moroccan influence and the Spanish influence, they were very close together historically, geographically. The musicians started to create music that would be appropriate for dances that would have a little bit of a Spanish influence but a little bit of a Middle Eastern influence. The things that we dance with now, you talk about poi and fire and veils, those are not traditionally all of them from the Middle East. So those are things that we've fused onto it. You know, fusion is a very strange
term. I think where people get irritated by it, and personally, I don't have much of a chip on my shoulder about fusion. I mean, if someone's a good dancer, most of the time I go, that was a good dance. I might go, I didn't really think it was Hawaiian, or I didn't really think it was, you know, tribal, but I enjoyed it. You know, what I think bothers some people is when the label doesn't seem to fit. A lot of people do get hung up about presentation. If you're going to a show and people are claiming to be tribal or to be cabaret or to be whatever they're claiming to be, and they come on stage and you're like, that is really not anything that's supposed to be. I think that is what bothers people about fusion. Not that people have a problem with different things being fused together. I think if you just call it, hey, this is a fusion piece, then great. You just did a fusion of whatever you just fused. But if you're going to call it something, you know, I keep throwing in hula because I'm tired. I can't think of anything else. But if you're going to call it a hula tribal fusion, then people have expectations walking into that. And I think that's what gets people sort of rubbed the wrong way.
And Mary's touched on what my feeling is. I just, you know, and I guess I shouldn't get hung up on labels, but I do just because it can go so very far. For me, if you're going to call it tribal fusion, then you need to have tribal belly dance in your dance. You can't just pop and lock and call it tribal tribal fusion. You're not doing anything. There's no belly dance in your number.
There was a Maya in there.
Yeah. Again, one move does not constitute fusion.
What about two moves? Yeah, I do. That's true, because there's a lot of that that's getting really popular, the popping and locking and putting in hip-hop influences.
Which is great, and I think it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about your belly dance. Otherwise, go take a hip-hop class and perform hip-hop. I mean, that's a viable art form, and it's fun to watch, and I enjoy watching that too. And I don't have a problem. Or just call it fusion. Some girls have melded different dances together and called it world fusion. Fine. That's a great, you know,
catch-all,
exactly. But tribal fusion, you're being a little too specific, I think.
Just walk on stage and be like, today I'm going to be doing a dance.
Well, exactly. I will be dancing. Or like, you know, what Carol was saying, it's your interpretation of the music. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But then when you're calling it tribal fusion and you have absolutely no tribal belly dance in there at all, or belly dance, just specifically. And it's just kind of like, where was, you know, you might have like a belly roll somewhere as you're walking across the stage. Okay, that's great. I mean, great that you could have added that in as you walked across the stage. But the rest of your number was hip hop.
What I don't understand, though, is why you have to have a label for what you're dancing.
Exactly. I mean, but some people feel that they do. And if you're going to label it, then, you know, it almost just makes you look, again, my perception is, if you mislabel yourself, because you're going to label yourself and you mislabel yourself, then it just makes you look like you have no clue what you're doing.
This is part of a larger problem, though, because it all sort of goes back to what Carol was talking about earlier about how because there's so much stuff going on and because there's no standardization, mm-hmm. people don't know what to label themselves. And I mean, it goes into a bunch of different arenas. So it's like, OK, if you have a dancer coming to your area who's teaching a workshop, and they plug their workshop a certain way and they go, this will be a tribal fusion workshop or this will be a whatever workshop. And then you have a completely different concept of what that term means than what they think it means. And you go and it's not what you wanted. And you leave really not happy with what you got out of it. You know, that's another part of what gets people really up in arms about.
Well, yeah, I'm paying
money.
You know,
I want to know. Exactly. You know, I thought this was going to be flamenco fusion. And then your idea of flamenco fusion was to do all flamenco, but I thought there was going to be like a lot of, you know, other stuff in there because this other girl I saw on YouTube did a flamenco fusion number and it was way different than that, but I liked what she did, you know?
Well, the other thing is when you go into something like that with expectations, you should really do a lot of research before you have expectations. If they say flamenco, check the website, talk to people who have taken lessons before from this person. I mean, when you say fusion to me, I think about dark eyeliner, black. I think of Rachel Bryce and yoga moves. I think of Unmada and that rubber tire costume. How would you define that? I would have called that fusion because I didn't know anything else to call it. What about the burlesque things that they do?
That's where I was going next.
Which is another thing, you know, I mean.
And that's a really big deal because that could change depending on your audience. I mean, if someone labels themselves as a burlesque fusion dancer, you may not want to hire that person if you're doing a family-friendly event.
And if you're mm-hmm. thinking about going to an event, if they say there's going to be burlesque there, there are a lot of people that aren't going to go because
exactly.
they don't know what to expect.
And there's so many different flavors of what people's interpretation of burlesque is. I mean, there's everything from like, I'm burlesque steampunky to like, I'm burlesque saloon girl to like, I'm burlesque and I wear hot pants and a bra.
But yeah, I mean, I agree. It really starts on defining what fusion is. I think what Sarah Kate is trying to say, like, if you're going to fuse something, you know, where is that line of fusing? Do you need to fuse something that you completely have known and studied and that's what you fuse with your belly dance versus, you know, just fusing everything? I think I'm in agreement with Carol. I think it's more of an interpretation.
Well, and
of your
you aren't
going
to fuse something that you don't know how to do.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, if she doesn't know how to do Japanese dancing, she's not going to do it. How can you throw in something that you don't
know?
Okay,
I think that's her problem, though. I think
Sarah Kate won't do it, yes, but there are other people.
I think her thought is that people will claim, hey, I'm doing flamenco fusion, and then, oh, I saw no flamenco in there, and I've been a flamenco dancer for, you know, like, whatever. You know, people who know what they're looking for and think there was nothing in there. You watched one YouTube video, and suddenly you think that you know enough about a style to claim that you're fusing it cohesively.
Well, but then again, I mean, what difference does it make if all they're doing is putting their video up on YouTube? You know,
yeah.
Who have they heard except, you know, they look like an idiot? The other thing is, you can call it fusion. If I picked a flamenco number and I did a complete belly dance to it, it's my interpretation of that song. What makes it not fusion? I didn't use flamenco steps. Well, I used flamenco music.
Yeah, right. It could go very...
How is that not...
Correct. It could go... It's mm-hmm. definitely going beyond what your actual dance is. It goes down to your costuming and your music as well.
So. I think people get more possessive of styles that they're more familiar with. I mean, I know I do. I've grown more possessive of belly dance. The more that I have invested in belly dance, the more, I guess, irritated I get when I see people who are, you know, oh, I'm such a great belly dancer, and then they don't know what they're doing. If I transfer my little petty irritations from just people who don't know how to correctly execute belly dance technique but are saying they're belly dancers, if I have multitudes of years experience with a certain dance style, and then I see someone who's claiming to fuse it, then I would probably find that irritating. If I've invested a lot of time and a lot of money, a lot of effort and a lot of practice, and then to have somebody go, okay, I'm just fusing this. Now this also goes back to just labels. That's just how you present it.
I think that's...
If somebody uses a flamenco song and says, I'm doing a fusion piece, and goes on stage and does whatever, they're doing a fusion piece to a flamenco song. You know, if they say, I'm doing a flamenco fusion piece, and there's no flamenco in there, But then you have like the dance Nazis in whatever arena that are go, if they use a flamenco piece, they should only do flamenco. I mean, it there's such a spectrum of how psychotic you're going to go.
Basically,
in either direction.
Don't label yourself.
Yeah, I would say.
Be done with it.
So that brings up another thing. When is a fusion a bad idea? And I haven't seen any extreme examples myself. I mean, I've seen some belly dancers that seem to be having convulsions, and they said they're doing some kind of fusion routine. I didn't even touch that. They might have been having convulsions, well, and I didn't want to insult or hurt any feelings.
Exactly, but. And that's the problem, too. I mean, it's looking at it from, is it just bad fusion, or is it just bad dancing? Oh, man. Okay. I'm done with that topic.
Hey, guess what, Tammy? Always. I have another song.
Yay! Bring it on.
Okay. So we are going to hear a song now called Cure for the Itch by Linkin Park.
All right now. Wasn't that fun? Let's try something else.
How fusion-y that song was. Or was it? What's coming up next, Tammy?
So our next question is from Christina, and she is discussing the issue of weight and people making rude comments. I think, to me, what I got out of her question is body image and the belly dancer and public views.
I think that's a really good topic because it comes up all the time. Belly dancers are supposedly, as a community, very welcoming of all ages, body types, big, tall, large, small, you know, old, young. As a community, overall, we do that. And yet, when you see performers in public, that's not generally what you see. The ones who get paid are the ones that are stereotypically young and attractive and slender. Mm-hmm. They can be curvaceous, but overweight, not so very often.
But I will have to say that as an overweight dancer, because I am, I've gotten a lot of positive comments when I've performed in public events. Like, I've never had anyone be like, get off stage, fatty.
That's because you're an excellent dancer. No, seriously, there's a huge difference between a mediocre overweight dancer and somebody who's really good.
Well, thank you. Well, I mean, that is true. If you are a slender, attractive, mediocre dancer, you get a whole lot more slack than if you are not so slender, attractive, mediocre dancer. I will say that much. But also, like on the Sheer.net tribe, Tammy reminded me of this today. There was a thread recently. Sheer posted a picture of a very overweight belly dancer posted on some kind of website that basically you just post a funny picture and people make fun of it.
It was posted on like three different websites.
Yeah.
Same picture.
And honestly, I was just struck by how really happy she looked. And on one of the websites, the majority of the comments were positive. Really, for the most part, having been a heavier dancer, you know, the longer I've danced, the better I feel about myself. I mean, really, I think there's a part of us that's like, well, obviously we want our picture to be, you know, mocked. But there's another part of me that's like, yeah, and so what? This woman doesn't know these people. And she was glowing with how happy she looked. So, and for the most part, people who go to belly dance shows have someone that they know in the show. I mean, it's geared towards the belly dance community, which is a whole other topic people start griping about. But
I can't imagine that that would happen at a belly dance show. Now, if you take your belly dancing and you go someplace else. Now,
well, that goes back to the other thing we were talking about. You know, if you are expecting to see a certain thing and you're given something else, you're probably not going to be super excited about it.
Exactly.
I mean, because so, you're not, that's not what you went there for, you know, so I can understand that.
I mean, I performed too, like at art festivals and things that aren't geared toward belly dancers necessarily. And I've gotten positive feedback from the audience as well. And I, too, am not the most slender, but I am curvaceous. That's
and you're really cute. What if Tammy's more than once said, yeah, but I have my cuteness factor working for me. And it's true.
I won't always have that, but I've got it now. I'll work it. So, and I think I'm confident enough that, okay, yeah, I'm overweight. I know that. I've lived with that for many years. But I'm confident in what I'm doing, and I think that's something else as well. Like you were talking about the picture that's online of this girl's confident. She is happy and you can see it in her dance. So I think as an audience member, typically when they see someone who's out there, they're confident about what they're doing. They're a good dancer. You really aren't going to have a lot of negative feedback of people like actually yelling at the dancers. And that's kind of what Christina is kind of indicating in her thing. So I haven't actually been
you
around.
You just wonder what the venue was. Where
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, and again, as a dancer, you should choose what venues you're going to perform at, too. I personally would not be performing at a bar for a multitude of reasons.
Of course,
I
mean, a lot of sticky. Good reasons not to.
Exactly. And I think also when it comes to different paid gigs, a lot of times I think it goes back to talking about for a restaurant. They don't know what they're looking for in a dancer. They just want somebody pretty and who's not going to bother, you know, the people in that are eating. So you can't really take it personally. They're not looking at your dancing. They're just not. They pick the beautiful people or what they envision as a beautiful person. I mean, you look at acting. Most of our famous actors and actresses, they're very attractive. You know, if they're not so attractive.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, but he's amazing at what he does.
That's true.
Some of the attractive actors, very famous, I don't really think they're
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Thank you.
Who? Yeah, well, he's not famous anymore because...
He's horrible.
Horrible.
I miss
Freddie Prinze Jr. He's married to Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Are they married?
Yeah, and they have a baby.
OMG.
They just had a baby. Sorry, I keep up on Buffy. Anyways.
But it is a concern. I mean, and for troop leaders, because if you want your troops to get business, you have to make that decision. You know, are you going to be going for the venues that are going to embrace all types of body types, or are you, because if you want to get some gigs, you're going to have that type of troupe where everyone, you know, fits a certain, you know, belt size. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're upfront about it. I think
it's one of those, the ugly truth. I mean, that's
well, it's sad,
it is,
but it's true.
Yeah.
And as a solo performer, I think when you're putting yourself out there, you need to make sure that the people that you're dealing with understand what you look like, you know, whether you're happy with your body or not. If you don't really have a good publicity picture, or you have a great publicity picture but it's 25 years old or whatever,
it's like online dating. Oh, goodness.
Well, like you behind a veil.
Well, you know, and that can work, but you know what,
covering everything but one eye.
And then when you get to the event and they're not happy with you. So I think it pays to be upfront. But as long as you're confident about yourself, it's like, well, you know, this is what I am. This is what's going to happen. Don't try and convince people that you're something that you're not. And don't be ashamed of what you are.
Yeah, that's like a life lesson. That's not even just belly dance related.
Well, yeah, true.
So do you have any more music for us?
Okay, so this next song is called La Realité. The Yuxek remix. That sounds a little vulgar, but it's not. It's by Amadou and Mariam. And incidentally, both of these artists are legally blind.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? I thought it was. Here we go. Okay, so Christina asked another question, and me and Tammy cannot reply to this intelligently without just making the stuff up. So her second question for you, Carol, was, it seems like in the 70s, belly dancing was more in than it is now, and it seems they were more respected back then. So what do you think? Do you think belly dancing was more respected, or do you think it's part of that, in the golden era, back when people vacuumed in pearls? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think... if she wasn't there, how could she possibly know that? I think depends on the area that you're talking about. Now, my background is in New York, and the dancers that there were in New York were very well respected. Were they respected in California? I honestly couldn't say. I assume they were. You know, there were famous dancers from the West Coast and from the East Coast, and there was a Maya who's from, I think, New Mexico or someplace really not one of the coasts, you know.
My geography soulmate is here. She was in not one of the coasts.
Well, yes. She's not like middle America. I believe it was from the Southwest. These are the kind of people that you had then. You had Serena and Morocco and Anahit Sofian and Burt Balladine.
Who are still respected today.
Exactly. They are, as you say, still respected today. I think like anything, it depends on the atmosphere at the time. If dance is doing well, dancers will be respected. If dance is not very popular, you're not going to respect people that aren't in the news at the moment.
These dancers were respected in their area, but were they, you know, were they famous with everybody else, or was it within the belly dance community? Or
I think it was more within the belly dance community, because it tends to be a very insular,
exactly,
kind of a thing. Yeah, but it's like anything. How many tap dancers do you know? Famous tap dancers.
Gregory Hines.
Okay, that's one.
Yeah, that's it.
Fred and Ginger.
Savion, what was his name?
Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly, yeah. But that was a movie. These were movie stars, not actually...
I don't know anybody who wasn't in the movies.
There you go. See, it's like anything. Dance is a very insular field, and you don't have that widespread, like, movie star respect.
Well, it's like anything. I don't know who's famous in NASCAR. It's not my thing. You know, I don't know who's famous in basketball. Granted, basketball is more popular than belly dance, I'd say, in general.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they get definitely more airtime. But I mean, like, if it's not your niche, why would you know these people? You know, and why should we expect that?
And that's why I'm not quite sure that it was a matter of dancers in the 70s being more respected than they are now. Because, again, it was they were respected within the community and still are. And I think that there are certain dancers in our community that are well-respected and probably will be for years to come within the belly dance community.
Exactly. Now, maybe she's talking about their popularity and their visibility. People like Serena had a TV show. Mm-hmm. Some of the belly dancers appeared on the late-night TV shows. Now, you would have belly dance performers come on, and the one who used to roll the quarters on her belly, you know, and that was always good for a 2-minute shot, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you got Dolphina was on Conan. You have Nina and Vina were on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
So Halo was on Ellen.
Exactly. So it's not like we have people. There's a whole show on
Fit TV? Shimmy program.
Yeah, Shimmy. Exactly. So I really think it's all relative. All right. So any final music for us?
Why, yes. I do have one final choice selection. So our last song for the evening is The Hop by Radio Citizen featuring Bajka. And this song I heard on So You Think You Can Dance Canada.
Going on my lacking in the twist to cap, and in the days back, climbing up the coast like that. Tangerine on ice in the back seat. Roll it top down, ready to fly on the street. Ready to fly on the street.
Okay, so that's all the music I have. Do we have any more questions? Any more burning questions?
No, that was it.
Any more extinguished questions?
Not that I know.
That's right.
Beat some of the questions to death, but yes, like we're done. No, I liked our discussion. I really appreciate you coming by again, Carol, and you always have such a strong opinion. I just love having you. Really, this is like a perfect episode for you to be on.
Thank you so much.
So now that we are done with our exciting panel episode, to finish things off, what's going on around town?
Well, I've got quite a few events coming up in November, so let's just get started. The first event is November 13th through 15th in West Palm Beach is the Sharky Experiment, www.thesharkyexperiment.com. Boyzhenka is going to be teaching Mirabets, Charter from Izumi, Alicia from Bellycraft, Daniela, and Lacey from Florida Tribal. And then two events that were just handed to me. The first is November 13th. It's a Make-A-Wish event. Our lovely guest here, Carol, will be performing.
A.K.A. Phoenicia.
Yes, A.K.A. Phoenicia. And there's going to be all kinds of different styles of dance performed. Some of the ones I have listed here is Jitterbug, West Coast Swing, Hustle, and then some Latin Salsa Merengue.
It's actually going to be a dance competition.
Wow.
Oh, really?
I'm not competing. They're going to have entertainment as well as the competitions. It's a ballroom event.
And that sounds really cool.
So that's going to be actually over here in Altamont at the Clarion Inn and Conference Center. And it's not too bad. It's $25. I assume that since it's for Make-A-Wish, the money would go to Make-A-Wish Foundation. So
Either that or that's totally horrible what they're doing.
Exactly.
make a wish for my vacation to Tahiti.
Aww. Unless they really pack that place, it's not going to be $25 per person. It's not going to get you to Tahiti. It's really expensive. I've looked at it.
You can't even get to Seattle. Tahiti.
I know, really. Like Tahiti's.
Sheboygan. Sounds good.
We'll go to one of the states that's not on the coast.
Yeah.
We can get there.
Carol / Phoenicia will be very busy this weekend because on Saturday, November 14th, she will be performing at the one-year anniversary of Coliseum of Comics. I personally like the Coliseum of Comics. I'm not a comic book reader, actually, but they have like neat little action figure stuff, and I like that.
And they have a huge statue of the Hulk in the window.
Cool. That's very neat. So.
Chupa Tiarizzi is going to be performing there as well.
Oh, also coming up in November, Yip Podcast is co-hosting our first, like, woo, podcast event of Tamlyn Dalal's documentary, 40 Days and 1001 Nights, that was like the companion video to her book of the same title. Is she traveled to 5 different Muslim countries and spent 40 days in each country. Anyway, I thought it was just really, really interesting. And we sort of wanted to share it with some more people in the community. So we are partnering with Jody and Assad, who are from Beachcombers Bazaar, to have a viewing of Tamlyn Dalal's video on the 14th. Right in the College Park area. So if you are in the Orlando area, we're going to start the movie at 9, and there's going to be some other like beachcombery, bangly henna things that Jody's going to do, and it should be really fun. I really liked the movie.
Awesome. I'll be there. If you have any upcoming events or you just want to talk to us, you can email us at email@yippodcast.com. You can go to our website at www.yippodcast.com. You can Skype us at yippodcast. Leave us a message at 321-441-3933. You can join our tribe at tribes.tribe.net/yippodcast. Also, you can join our newsletter. So, yay. That's all I have this week. Thank you again, Carol, for coming by. This
Thank
has
you
been
for having me.
Very much appreciated.
Yay.
Awesome.
This has been Tammy.
And this has been Mary.
Yep. Sounds good. I like. Wow. I was drilling to that in my seat.
You want to hear a music joke?
Oh, sure.
Oh, geez.
What's the definition of perfect pitch?
I don't know. Tell me.
When you throw a banjo into a dumpster and you hit an accordion. Brr-ching! You can substitute in the two instruments you hate the most. A lot of people like to pick piccolo.
That's what made the joke funny, is that right there? So we thought we would bring those up and discuss them amongst ourselves.
Yay. That sounds like so much fun. What do you think, Carol?
I think it's a very exciting idea.
You guys are douchebags. All right.
I hope that gets edited out.
Depends on my mood. Really, I can't make any guarantees.